Rout.
And I'm Dan Mick.
And today we're going to talk about Greenberg, How to Train Your Dragon, and Hot Tub Time Machine.
Hell yeah.
But first, we have a couple news stories. First news story, Godzilla film. Now this will be, Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures are going to co-produce and co-finance a Godzilla film. This will be the 29th Godzilla film. And they're planning a 2012 release. So
it's going to be called Clash of the Godzillas.
Yep.
In 3D.
Or War of the Clash of the Godzillas.
War of the Clash of the Godzillas.
But yeah, so I mean, what do you... I mean, the last Godzilla film I saw, and it might have been the last, 1998.
No, there was also...
Oh, the Japanese.
The Roland Emmerich Godzilla with Matthew Broderick is 98, and then they came out with the Godzilla 2000 or something like
yeah,
that, like
right.
2 years later, which I think they made as like a... Almost they wanted to counter the Roland Emmerich film because it was... People hated it so much, and after that, I don't really know what has happened. So, I guess the way that Hollywood is nowadays is about time, 12 years, to do it again, but yeah. I was amazed that there, I didn't even realize there had been 28 films made.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen, other than clips and stuff, I know there was like a shout out in kind of Crank High Voltage. That was like the last like Godzilla reference I've seen in
yeah,
a while.
Right,
I mean,
right,
Cloverfield,
right.
You know.
Cloverfield was kind of like Godzilla with a new monster, so.
Yeah, but there's no details on director, plot, mm-hmm. cast, anything, so. But I mean, if they want to release by 2012, I'm sure for a big budget movie like this, they would get into production pretty soon. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
So yeah, I mean, what do you think of the Roland Emmerich version? Is it as bad as everyone says?
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, it's really bad. There's a lot of things. I mean, plot holes are ridiculous and all that stuff. And Matthew Broderick's not really a great leading man. Hank Azaria is pretty strong in it. I actually don't even remember who the girl is. She was kind of not a known actress really at the time. And I don't. Obviously, that movie didn't really help her career.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, I saw it when I was younger, but I enjoyed it, but I remember like seeing it on TV on ABC or something, and I thought it was fine, but I don't
know. I mean, I think it's probably, I haven't seen 10,000 BC, but for my money, it's Roland Emmerich's worst movie, which, you know, considering the movies he makes, is not great, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think that, I guess remaking it, I guess I get it, just because... But at the same time, I feel like it's almost like making Terminator Salvation or people buying the rights after Terminator Salvation flopped to make a 5 and a 6 Terminator. Like, I mean, is it not just a tired franchise? Is it not just a worn-out
yeah.
name? I feel like Godzilla fits that bill in some respects, so I kind of don't quite understand financially why someone would be willing to throw another 150, 200 million into a franchise like Godzilla. Kind of, it's a little strange for me.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of monster movies, even Cloverfield, like $30 million it cost, and then it made like, what, 80 something?
So yeah, I mean, but Clover, but yeah, but so.
But this movie's not going to be a $30 million movie.
You know, I mean, Cloverfield is the District 9 of Godzilla movies.
Yeah.
You know, so, it, yeah, if they did something like that, I mean, Cloverfield 2, I think they should make.
Hell yeah, yeah.
But Cloverfield 2 is much different than Godzilla 29.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that that's a big distinction. So, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. And, you know, it's interesting that Warner Brothers and Legendary is doing... Well, I guess it makes sense. They've been... We always kind of praise Warner Brothers, but, like, with Clash of the Titans and
yeah.
all their temples being in 3D now and you know, this Godzilla news, it does kind of seem like they're falling in line, which
yeah.
is a little sad, which I guess... You can understand after
Maybe
the watch
forever,
the Watchmen,
whatever, yeah.
like
oh,
the success of Watchmen and
yeah.
stuff. So,
and dude, speaking of Roland Emmerich, we weren't going to talk about this, but Will Smith. There was a report that IESB uncovered that he has agreed to do two sequels for Independence Day.
Will Smith has?
Will Smith, yeah.
What is that guy doing? Like, he doesn't. He's really annoying me, actually. Will Smith, just quickly, because
yeah, you just wrote a article about
because.
About Men in Black 3, he has to decide.
Right, well, yeah, but also, his last movie was in 2007.
Yeah.
Okay, it was 7 Pounds, which is one of the worst movies that's ever been made. Like,
2008.
Is it 2008?
Yeah, because he had no movies in 2009. And
are you sure it wasn't? The
end
of 2007?
Yeah.
Okay, well, whatever. So 2008, 7 Pounds.
Because I watched it right after Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
So was it 2007 was Pursuit of Happiness? No, I Am Legend. 06, Pursuit of Happiness. 07, I Am Legend. 08, 7 Pounds.
And Hancock.
And Hancock, right in the middle of all that. And then, So whatever, I mean, all, you know, then 7 pounds, so 7 pounds is horrible, you know, like, just really a terrible film, poorly written, poorly directed, poorly acted by Will Smith, I thought, honestly, for the most part. And then nothing. Like, he hasn't even decided on his next film.
Yeah.
So that means that, like, you know, there's a chance his next film will come out in 2011, but because it's a Will Smith movie, probably not until 2012. Yeah, so that means that there's going to be essentially 4 years of no Will Smith movies, which is just stupid because of how bankable he is. He's got literally any movie kid to pick, The Suspicion remake, The City That Sailed, Men in Black 3, you know, these Independence Day movies. I mean, why not do an independent movie? Why not do something?
Yeah. What's the thing? Like,
is Jada Pinkett Smith that busy? She hasn't done shit either, except for Hawthorne on TNT.
His kid's gonna be the next huge actor.
Karate Kid. So supporting Jaden's career.
It's
like annoying me though.
Yeah. If he did like a huge blockbuster and failed, and he wanted to go away for like 4 years, like that'd be. But it was 7 pounds. It didn't cost much. And
right. I mean, you know, it was a miscalculation, and it's like now.
And his acting was ridiculous in the movie, but it wasn't. That part of the movie is not what I hated about it.
No, me neither, but I don't think that he helped his cause. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think the only two people who really got out of that movie unhinged, maybe three people, were Rosario Dawson, Woody Harrelson, and Barry Pepper.
Yeah.
You know, part of the reason Barry Pepper gets out is because he's in it for like 5 minutes. But like, you know, so I that's just kind of my little Will Smith rant. I just hope he makes a decision. I hope, in terms of the decision, I hope that it's The City That Sailed. Because I love Andrew Niccol as a writer and as a director.
It'd be really cool to see him do
something. He's such a visionary, I think, really, in terms of... He's a visionary in a very cardboard time, I would say.
It's films like that. Isn't Justin Theroux... He was writing Men in Black 3, I think, right?
Ian Coen.
Oh, Ian Coen was, that's right.
Yeah, the other Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder, yeah. So, I mean, I'm not really... I mean, I'd rather see him do that, but
fuck no. Fuck any chance of Men in Black 3 ever coming out. If that movie comes out... I'm gonna burn something down.
Yeah.
Hopefully, the studio that produces it. Yeah. That lot.
And another transition from Godzilla, kind of. Cloverfield, J.J. Abrams.
What?
And he's producing Mission Impossible 4.
Oh, yeah.
Bring it back.
That was a stress transition, but yes.
It wasn't smooth.
The J.J. Abrams transition.
Yeah, so J.J. Abrams and Tom Cruise are producing, and Tom Cruise will play again.
Now, that is a sequel that I want to see.
Hell yes. And they've been looking for directors. And guess who's rumored? Brad Bird, the director of The Iron Giant and The Incredibles, and I would love to see him. I mean, he's only in talks. Like they said, they met with a bunch of other directors.
That'd be great.
Edgar Wright was another one. Would love to see him do that. Zombieland's Ruben Fleischer.
I think he turned it down though.
Yeah, because he's
doing this like buddy cop. What was it? It's Cop Out. It's called Cop Out, right?
Cop Out 2.
Yeah. Cop Out 2.
I mean, that's
two cop, two outed.
Yep. And, I mean, yeah, and he, Brad Bird, I mean, we reported a year ago that he is interested in doing this live action. 1906. About the San Francisco earthquake. You can kind of tell this, like, father-son story, I think, about,
But he didn't get the money.
So, I would love to see him take on something like this. I mean, I love, Mission Impossible 3, I think is the best of the series, and I love what J.J. Abrams did with it. And the fact that he's producing gives me strength.
And also, I think, I mean, say what you will about Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is a very good producer.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell the movies that he produces, at the very least, you know, he has a hand, or his company has a hand in them. You know what I mean? So, I mean, he got Narc out there, for example. You know, because, I think partly because he produced that indie film Narc, Joe Carnahan, before they had a falling out, and that was the reason Joe Carnahan didn't direct MI3, which is probably for the better.
Yeah.
I mean, he was able to, you know, kind of get Narc that $5 million at the box office, I think, because of the Tom Cruise, you know, Paul Wagner name. So, I mean, it's really important.
And, I mean, we saw the Night and Day... Actually, I haven't watched it yet. The Night and Day trailer.
I love the full Night and Day trailer. I think it looks like an updated, a better version of something like Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I think that it just looks more fun, more screwball. Tom Cruise really seems committed to, like, his crazy character. And, you know, Cameron Diaz, I've kind of learned to accept her as an actress who's trying to do things with her career after The Box and after, what was the movie, the Nick Cassavetes movie?
My Sister's Keeper.
I mean, say what you will about either of those films, but she definitely tried to do new things for her career in both those films.
Yeah.
So, and also, even in What Happens in Vegas, I mean, it's the standard, but, like, she... I thought that was a funny movie. She played off Ashton Kutcher.
It could have been so bad.
Yeah, so so I think that hopefully this is like the turnaround of her career, where she's trying to do new things.
I'm really, I mean, I hope Tom, because I mean, we saw MI3. People said a reason for that didn't perform extremely well was the whole Scientology stuff.
Which I believe that.
And yeah. And then Valkyrie didn't really perform that great.
Well, hang on. Valkyrie did a lot better than people thought it would.
Yeah, but it wasn't like.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think
with
that
Tom
Cruise
attached, it should have been a lot better.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about, I think so, I kind of, but if you think about, like, in my mind, Valkyrie is closer to an Eyes Wide Shut, Magnolia,
okay, yeah.
Tom Cruise movie than, you know, than these big studio films. I mean, Valkyrie was never going to be a big film like that, and then after like the 2 year wait after it got finished shooting, all the rumors about how Germany didn't want him there because of Scientology, the fact that people, the whole Tom Cruise, you know, hate was still going on.
Yeah. Well,
and
Tom
the fact that
it still made
like 180 million worldwide, and only cost 75 million. I mean, it made its money back, and then some. I mean, I think you know.
Well, I hope with Night and Day and MI4 that he kind of gets back, because he deserves. I mean, we just watched Minority Report, and I mean,
oh,
there's
yeah.
so many Tom
I mean,
Cruise roles.
And
that,
like, who gives a shit about his personal life?
Yeah, that's exactly,
I don't care
exactly.
if he, you know, I don't care what he does at those Scientology yeah. meetings. Like, he is one of the best movie stars that American film has to offer. He still is,
yeah.
And I think Night and Day will show that, and hopefully MI4
yeah,
shows that. I mean, if people actually watch MI3. He's incredible in that movie.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I was talking to a friend earlier, and the first 10 minutes of Mission Impossible 3 is one of his best scenes.
Yeah.
When he's, you know, trying to talk down Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's one of the best openings
yeah.
of any film like that I've seen, and he's great in it, so.
And, I mean, Paramount's already planning May 27th, 2011 release, which is really soon.
For MI4?
Yeah, a year, almost a year. And a month.
I mean,
away,
they gotta get going.
They gotta go. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
They gotta go. So, I mean, they're gonna obviously decide a director really soon for a summer shoot, so. We will keep you updated.
Definitely.
And last story. Now, Cannes Film Festival is kicking off May 12th,
mm-hmm.
and they announced the opening night of the fest, and it's Robin Hood, Ridley Scott's Robin Hood. And last year, Dan was at the festival,
mm-hmm.
Up premiere. Did that go over well, the people?
Yeah, I mean, it did.
Remember
like a lot of things at Cannes, though, I mean, the opinions were... Actually, no, that's not true. Up was... overwhelmingly mm-hmm. successful at Cannes, actually. Yeah. So Up was a big hit. Now I thought that was a very good choice in terms of
making
that 3D transition kind of like in
yeah,
a year
great,
that was
yeah.
yeah, I thought that was smart.
I love someone one critic tweeted a picture of like all the everyone at Cannes wearing 3D glasses.
Well, and everybody's in tuxes wearing 3D
yeah,
glasses.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's
yeah.
really funny, yeah.
And, but I mean, looking back, a lot of people when Robin Hood, they said it was premiering, it's like, oh man, Cannes like sold out. Like, I read the articles, I was like, if you look back at like the 10 films that
yeah.
premiered, like in the last decade, like we got...
Well, it's usually either with the premieres, it's either big budget films
yeah.
like that, like the Da Vinci Code,
yeah.
you know.
Oh yeah, Da Vinci Code.
Or... Cannes darlings who have kind of bigger budget films like Wong Kar Wai, My
yeah.
Blueberry,
Bad Education,
Almodovar, you know.
Moulin Rouge.
Even though Almodovar has never won the Palme d'Or, I don't think. Has he? I don't think so.
I don't think so, but I mean...
Because he had Broken Embraces in the competition last year,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't win. Even though
yeah.
that movie's great.
Yeah, but Moulin Rouge was there, Blindness was there.
Great, Blindness, which is more or less, and that was City of God won the... I think the grand jury prize or something, like the second,
mm-hmm.
the thing that Un Profit won.
Yeah, which, great movie. If you're,
yeah.
Hopefully a lot of our listeners are in Buffalo, and that just came out on Friday, so check out Un Profit if you can.
Definitely.
Well, he won Best Screenplay for, Valverde was nominated.
No, but he's never won.
He won Best
None
Director.
Of his films have ever won the Palme d'Or.
No.
Right, okay.
Yeah, the three of them have been nominated.
But he is kind of a Cannes darling, though. A lot of his films have been in Cannes.
Yeah. But, I mean, just looking at what films, like, are possibly there, Johnny Depp, The Rum Diary, that movie was shot, like, a year
Wait,
ago.
Johnny Depp didn't direct
it? Johnny Depp, In The Rum Diary. And in an interview, Aaron Eckhart said they're kind of trying to get it ready for Cannes, so.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, but I guess...
Who directed that? It's not...
But
it's not Terry Gilliam.
I know. Johnny Depp was heavily involved outside of just him acting in it because they said it's kind of like his pet project.
He's like done Hunter S. Thompson things more than once. He was
yeah.
he read as Hunter S. Thompson in Gonzo.
Bruce Robinson directed it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so he's been around.
Yeah, with Nail and I, that was
Which that explains it. Because Johnny Depp loves within L&I.
Oh, there you go.
So he must have, I would imagine Johnny Depp probably recruited Bruce Robinson to do it if it's a pet project, like you say.
Yeah, and
that's interesting.
Yeah, we'll probably see Woody Allen's You Will Meet a Tall Dark Stranger. Which, I mean, we saw, you can go on our site, look at the picture. I mean, it kind of looks like a weird, like, 80s film just from that picture. I don't know. It was kind of, it kind of threw me off.
Oh, just his hair.
Yeah, and, like, the lighting. His hair, yeah. It's kind of, yeah. But I'm interested to see. I mean, his, Whatever Works wasn't the greatest movie. But, I mean.
I fucking hated that movie. You know that. I hate it. But yeah. But no, but he's been doing better lately,
though. Vicky Cristina Barcelona are my faves. So.
Aside from that, yeah, he's been.
I mean, I hope we see The Tree of Life, which is supposedly finished this week.
Me too.
There was confirmation. Beautiful, Alejandro Iñárritu. Which I've loved all of his movies. Babel. But it was good.
Damn. Whatever.
And then Oliver Stone, it might be in competition. Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps might be an in-competition film, which is kind of crazy.
I thought they were going for out-of-competition.
Yeah, but there was a news story today that...
Oh, really?
Said, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of... I didn't think... It looked kind of like a fun summer, spring movie, and it doesn't seem like...
That's strange, but I guess, yeah. Whatever, okay.
So, and then Julian Schnabel's Morel.
Right.
William Dafoe and Frida Pinto.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully we'll see some of those. William Monahan's London Boulevard. I don't know. Nothing's been really released pictures-wise.
I can't wait for it, though.
So.
It sounds like a really interesting story. But it sounds like an action movie, though.
Yeah.
Kind of. I don't really understand.
Yeah. Julie Taymor's The Tempest.
But, I mean...
But who knows that.
After all this happened.
Weinstein.
Yeah.
But it's finished, I mean, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, who's going to be there to promote it, though?
That's true.
They don't have a company.
That's true.
You know what I mean? That's because Miramax isn't really here.
But I mean, like, Blue Valentine. Oh, no, they picked it up after you, right? Yeah, I don't
know. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so.
So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure they announced. They always announced.
No, because it's not the Weinstein Company. It's Miramax.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so the Tempest isn't Weinstein. It's
right,
Miramax. Because Miramax was Disney, but now Disney shut it down.
Yeah.
So that's why the Tempest and then the five of the films Last Night and then those. There's like four others that
like
are just...
All Good Things was Weinstein.
All Good Things is Weinstein, yeah. So that's what's going on. So, yeah. I really hope that The Tempest does get released, though, because Julie Taymor is a very stylistic kind of individual director.
Yeah.
And say what you will about Across the Universe, but, you know, yeah. Titus, and she's got some good stuff out there.
Yeah, and hopefully... I mean, people said The Fighter might get...
Oh, really?
I don't know if that's done. Yeah.
It's kind of been...
Yeah, but I mean,
hopefully it'll be a good year for Brad Pitt, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, he's not in The Fighter. Jesus, yeah, I remember when he was supposed to be.
He's supposed to be in The Fighter. And Matt Damon was supposed to be.
Yeah, but, that's right. Oh.
But yeah, no, Mark Wahlberg and
Christian Bale.
So
that's right.
Hopefully, at least we see something from that.
So they're playing brothers. That's strange. That's strange casting, actually. Yeah.
Alright, well, that's about it for news. Keep checking with the film stage for all news updates. And we're going to move on to reviews.
Let's do it.
Alright, so first movie, I saw this a week ago, How to Train Your Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Dan is yet to see it, but I'm just going to talk about it for a little bit. This is Dean Dubois and Chris Sanders. They were the team behind Lilo and Stitch at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard like they were going to be brought on to do Pixar movies, and then they kind of like... were rejected. Like, it's kind of a weird story.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so they were working, like, Dean was working on Haima. He did
the Zero thing.
And I guess
very good.
Yeah, I guess Chris Sanders did kind of his own stuff, and then they came back together for this movie, How to Train a Dragon. And, I mean, the story, it's kind of standard. It's about this kid who, named Hiccup, who's growing up in a, Viking town. And everyone in the Viking town is kind of, you know, typical Viking.
Question, does he have hiccups?
He doesn't.
That's kind of strange.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. and so he's like kind of this unlikely, which is the one weird aspect of the movie, he does not have an accent. So, but everyone in the town, all the older people do, so like do they get their accent like when they turn 12 or something? Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of funny. Gerard Butler, Craig Ferguson, they play like these older, older Vikings, and like they all have accents. That was one weird aspect of it. But other than that, no, it's kind of, you know, a standard story. The very cool opening. The movie starts with this huge battle on their town. The dragons are attacking their town, and Hiccup, Jay Baruchel, is kind of running through this town and kind of introducing all the characters. And it's kind of like a cool exposition scene. And and then he guns down this like dragon called a Night Fury that no one has ever been able to hit before, and no one sees him. do it. And then on the next day, he goes in the woods, tries to find it, he finds it, and then, as you can see from the trailer, he kind of befriends it, and yeah,
and trains it.
And trains it. He trains his dragon.
Right.
And yeah, no, I mean, judging from the trailers, it kind of seems like very kiddie animation, something that DreamWorks is known for, but I was really blown away by this movie. Like, the way they handle the story, and the way, mostly the technical elements, like the, Roger Deakins was a visual consultant on this,
right.
And he did WALL-E previously, but I mean, in terms of animations, but he also was the Coen Brothers cinematographer, for those who don't know, and he worked on Andrew Dominik's Assassination of Jesse James, one of the best cinematography
feats
in the decade. Yeah. And I mean, in Avatar, there was a couple shots that, like, I was like, holy crap, like, my jaw dropped, but in this movie, the way that, like, James Cameron used a lot of just, like, side shots, like, as in this movie, like, it kind of puts you right in the dragon while they're flying, and,
mm-hmm.
and they use 3D so well, it's, like, unreal, and yeah, I mean, and the story even has an emotional, kind of punch at the end, and
mm-hmm.
they do something really drastic with the character that I would have never expected even a Pixar movie to do, and they do it here, and it's, I love this movie, man.
Yeah,
I mean, there is a few childish jokes and like him like running into trees and getting hit and like kind of like and like as like silly gags, but like and he falls down and it's like this like kind of silly gag and like that, but they're used really sparingly and like most of the focus is on his character and especially the relationship with his dad, played by Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
Gerard Butler's best role in years. And but yeah, no, I definitely urge everyone to check out this movie, especially in 3D. It's definitely worthy of it. The score is amazing. I know Jonesy from Sigur Rós. He helped with it. He only contributed one new song, and he also helped. There's a moment during the middle of the film that I could tell that was like his score or something.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know if he. But the rest of the movie is kind of this like rousing. The guy that did the Bourne movies.
Oh really?
Yeah, he did this.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it's really well done. It's just like any definitely a movie for all ages. Definitely check it out. Yeah, it's I can't believe the reviews. It's like insane.
Yeah,
it's higher than WALL-E, like 97%.
Yeah, people like, really responding to it.
Yeah, and I mean it is. I don't think it. I mean, it's so funny. Like we watched Up the other night. Me and my other roommate, and like Pixar, just so like the way they do every like shot and story element is just so far above like other things that's even hard. A lot of people are saying, "Oh, this is up with the best Pixar movies," but I don't think it is. I think it just alone, it's a great best DreamWorks movie by far, and definitely some of the better than a lot of the Pixar like least you know like
Cars.
Life and Cars and stuff like that. But I mean, I wouldn't say it's better than WALL-E. That's about
yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no. I mean, it's just like comparing them. I think you know, Pixar does its own thing, and DreamWorks does, and hopefully, they'll use Sanders and to blow up for more movies. But
definitely.
But yeah, so check out How to Train Your Dragon. I really wonder how it's gonna work with all the 3D stuff because Clash of the Titans. This is actually an interesting story. Paramount, like there was this article I read. Paramount, like. Was talking to theater exhibitors, and they're like, if you don't give us the 3D screens for How to Train Your Dragon, we are not going to give you as many for Iron Man 2 and stuff. Like, it's like is this
what
weird? Because, like, Alice is, and it's making boatloads of cash, Alice. So, like, theaters, I mean, obviously the IMAX ones went to How to Train Your Dragon, but all these theaters have just regular digital 3D screens,
right.
And they can choose kind of what they want to put in there. And so Paramount, like, I told them, was like, if, you know, take out Alice and put in How to Train Your Dragon, or we won't, like, because they, I guess they can say how many prints they're going to give him for 3D, digital
Wait,
copies.
Is Iron Man in 3D?
For Paramount. I don't, no, just, like, in general, like, just, we won't, like, it was, I don't know, it was, not 3D theaters, just, like,
yeah.
We won't give you as many.
But then won't that just hurt Paramount?
That's, I don't know, it's really
yeah.
weird, that's what I read, it was
I
on, like, Deadline,
understand
it was on, like,
how
Deadline
they have a card
or
to play with, I don't, that's weird.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So it's this weird battle for 3D, which wasn't anything before Avatar came out. So now it's like this huge.
Well, yeah,
kind of
no,
crazy.
It's only going to get worse.
Yeah, as we will talk about next week with Clash of the Titans.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
But all right, let's move on. Yeah, definitely see How to Train Your Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone would like it. That's all I can say.
All
right, next movie. Let's talk about Noah Baumbach's Greenberg.
Definitely. All right, yeah. So. Greenberg stars Ben Stiller and Greta Gerwig, who kind of made an indie name for herself in a lot of mumblecore movies like Nights and Weekends, and oh my gosh, Baghead, Hannah Takes the Stairs. So she's established herself in that respect. This is her first foray into bigger movies, even though like Greenberg's not really huge. Noah Baumbach, who made a name for himself with Kicking and Screaming, it was a college film way back in the mid-90s that he kind of gained some festival credit for, and then he came out with Squid and the Whale, which was a big success critically, and then More About the Wedding, which is kind of his try at a Truffaut film, a lot of people said it was a failure, though, but now it's one of those retrospectives. I think people have more of appreciation for it now, years later. That was in the Nicole Kidman movie. It was really not no likable characters and anything like that, so it kind of sounded like something people had to get comfortable with. This film sits somewhere in between, I think, both of those two last films, you know, where Squid and the Whale, you had the main character, Jesse Eisenberg's main character, had a little bit more charm, even though he himself was flawed. He was likable just because he was an adolescent, just because he was growing up, and he had a hard family life. But in this film, Greenberg, Ben Stiller, the name is Roger Greenberg, the protagonist, he's 40, so he's kind of already gone through all that. He's a lot less likable, very selfish person, very narcissistic, very kind of mean, overly honest, and then overly not honest. You know, he's very much someone who conceals himself while he berates other people for concealing themselves, kind of a thing. And Greta Gerwig is like a 25, 26-year-old college graduate who says at some point in the beginning, you know, now I've been out of college for as long as I was in. And it's kind of an interesting observation that I think people of our age who are about to graduate, people obviously a couple years older and a couple years younger, can definitely sympathize with that idea of this kind of generation and what do you do with degrees that everyone's getting at this point. That, you know, no one doesn't go to college, really.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of just interesting aspects. And like all of Baumbach's movies, the film is just one long observation. There's not really a narrative. The narrative is that Greenberg goes, gets out of a psych ward in New York City and travels to Los Angeles to essentially house / dog sit for his brother while him and his family go to Vietnam. His brother's played by Chris Messina. He's not in it for too long, but he's very good. And Greta Gerwig is Chris Messina's personal assistant, and she's in L.A., obviously, and, you know, Greenberg, and her name is, your character's name is, help me with this one.
Florence
Mara. They start a romance, expecting, you know, kind of, it's expected, and it's just, like, how Florence handles Greenberg's mean nature, and how Greenberg handles going back to where he grew up in Los Angeles, and all the kind of mistakes and people that he left behind and the bridges he burnt and all that stuff. So it's just really, I think Noah Baumbach's best film probably that I've seen. I haven't seen Kicking and Screaming, but of his three recent films, definitely I think his most honest. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do you
yeah,
think?
Yeah, I mean, I I mean, I love Squid and the Whale. Like, top,
right.
That's like one like top.
Yeah, me too. That's the thing. Yeah,
and
I totally agree.
I mean, I don't think it's good as Squid and the Whale.
Right.
But like watching it, as you said, like it's very different than that movie. Like, there's no
it
narrative.
Is.
So
yeah.
When I went into Greenberg, I was kind of expecting something like that. And so maybe if I watch Greenberg again, I'll like it
right.
more. But
I mean, it's not, and it's also not as funny as the Squid and the Whale.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah.
Which is interesting with Ben Stiller.
But I think Ben Stiller's character is much more interesting than.
Most of the characters
I know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, The Squid and the Whale, I love. I love it. When it came out, I loved it. It was one of my favorite movies that year. But I think at the end of the day, those characters are archetypes in a lot of ways. I mean, Jeff Daniels is the faux intellectual father, and then, you know, Laura Linney was the mother, right?
Yep.
Right. So Laura Linney is somewhat like that, but a little different. There wasn't enough time, I guess, just because there's so many characters. But at the same time, there was enough to distinguish them as their own creations. But this whole movie, Greenberg, this whole movie is about really Roger Greenberg and Florence Marr and how different these two people are, how they relate to their friends, and as an examination of just the way the humans interact with other humans. It is fascinating. And that's the thing, and when I wrote my review, I said this, the most interesting part about the Roger Greenberg character is that even though there's never a moment where you really like him,
yeah.
or even sympathize with him, really, you can relate to him, and everything that he does, and it's kind of scary in a way because, you know, there's that kind of selfish, narcissistic being in all of us.
He says a lot of things that I almost wish I could say. Like, he just,
right.
Yeah, that's why
so,
I like about this character.
You know, so it's definitely interesting. It's interesting to experience. So, yeah, but definitely, I think one of Ben Stiller's best performances.
Oh, yeah.
If not his best. You
definitely.
Know, so, I,
yeah.
You know.
I
remember that.
Yeah, no, I definitely like the movie. I mean, Dan talked about, like, the beginning of his relationship with Greta Gerwig, and there's this hilarious scene that
yeah.
I was just laughing, like,
yeah.
for 5 minutes, and
really
I was just laughing
tense,
at
him. Awkward, hilarious scene.
And, I mean, if that puts you off, like, you will not like this movie. Like that, it's like,
yeah.
or if you've seen a kind of,
well,
I guess,
I mean, if you're someone who can't handle situations that, like,
yeah. and that
you can't handle in real life, you know, like, awkward,
yeah.
embarrassing situations this entire movie.
Yeah. Like, if you don't like Margot, I think that's one of the reasons I love Margot at the Wedding, because I love these characters that, like, you wouldn't really see in another movie. Because, I mean, in most movies, there's a protagonist that everyone has to fall in love with.
Yeah, somewhat likable, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I just love the way Noah Baumbach, like, writes his characters. Like, they're just
Totally.
And I mean, more of the way.
But also, I think an important thing about this film, though, too, is that Florence's character is the other lead.
Yeah.
And she gets just as much screen time. And she's very likable.
Yeah.
And I think that saves it because of the entire movie. And I think that's why Margot at the Wedding.
There was no
one. Got such a reaction because it was Nicole Kidman and it wasn't like. I mean, I guess Jennifer Jason Leigh is kind of a likable character in that film, but
yeah.
I mean, even, like, the Jack Black character is not
yeah.
likable, the son's not that likable,
yeah.
so there was never someone to really latch on to, but in this film, at the very least,
yeah.
you can latch on to Greta Gerwig, who has such a natural presence. I really hope that people kind of give her the credit that she's due on a wider scale, because, I mean, you know,
also,
say what you will about Mumblecore and the way that they're filmed and the stylistic choices and whatever, which... You know, that's still up in the air, but
also
one of the best things to come out of Mumblecore is Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, and then
so.
His friends, Ivan Reese.
Right, Reese Ivans,
really
who's just been a great character actor for the last, you know, however many years, ever since Notting Hill.
Yeah.
His great performance in that movie. I mean, he's great. I think I love him in this movie, just
yeah.
as the friend who, I mean, he's essentially Roger Greenberg's only friend.
Yeah.
And he has no business even... I mean, you know,
trying to
but, you know,
connect.
Greenberg is so lucky that this
yeah.
guy even like
yeah.
gives two shits about what this, you know, what he has to say because he's such a prick to him and doesn't care about him and stuff. And,
yeah.
and
even the short time that Jennifer Jason Leigh shows up, she's good. And
yeah, I mean, you know, she's
now they have a scene later
they
on.
They have one really great,
really
scene.
Good scene.
Yeah.
Did you like the way I just remember this? The way they edited the first scene where Greenberg comes back and he goes to this party he really doesn't want to go to. And
he goes to this
friend.
Kid's birthday party. That's,
yeah.
that's I think,
that's
Jennifer Jason Leigh's kid, I think.
Yeah. And the way they edit the scene is, like, he has these separate conversations, like, throughout the party, but, like, they edit it so, like, it's one line from one conversation, one line from the other, one line from the other, and...
Oh, they, like, intersplice all the conversations.
Yeah, and
yeah.
it's just kind of like this. And then, like, the last shot is just him panning out and he's by himself, not really talking,
right.
like, to anyone. It was just
well,
like,
I think, I mean... You know, I think what's great about that scene is we've all been at parties like that where you kind of go and you know people, but like there's no reason for you to be there, kind
yeah.
of. So the conversations you have are just like expositionary.
Yeah.
So it's just so once you get out of the way, and someone like Greenberg isn't really able to handle that anyway.
Yeah.
So once that's done, you just kind of don't know what else to do, and so that's kind of almost. An easier, uncomfortable scene just because it is so relatable, but yeah, then it's a long dolly out, right? Like, or a
yeah.
crane, it must have been because it's going up.
Up yeah.
And he's just all alone in the middle of this party. And he says an interesting line, though, in that party, which I love and I'll always remember because of the movie, which he says, you know, it's because it's a kid's birthday party, and he says to Jennifer Jason Leigh, all the adults dress like kids, and all the kids dress like superheroes.
Yeah.
And I just I don't know why, but, like, when I heard the line at first, I wanted to roll my eyes halfway, and then halfway I loved it, and then, you know, weeks later, I fully love it. I really do. So, you know, it really has me, it's had me thinking ever since the film, and so that
yeah,
was
and as a whole, the film
really
definitely
great.
Is, like...
Yeah,
like,
and as a film, I think, and I think that line actually comes to fruition... literally in the film during one of the final scenes Which, I mean, not really. The thing about this movie is, spoiler-wise, there's really not much of a spoiler.
And his character's kind of the same.
Yeah, you know? Like, I mean, not much happens. That's the thing. I mean, if you're someone who depends on narrative and you know, kind of a dynamic character or something, this probably isn't... I mean, well, any Noah Baumbach film probably isn't the kind of film for you.
Yeah.
But I mean... Yeah, I mean, there's really no spoiler for a film like this. It just kind of goes on, and so towards the end of the film, the older daughter of Greenberg's brother comes home because she was at college or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, actually, a nice little cameo from Juno Temple, up and coming movie star, very
in every
beautiful,
movie
talented actress. Hopefully, gets famous really soon because she deserves to be making movies with Carey Mulligan and Abbie Cornish and Evan Rachel Wood and all the people who were on that Vanity Fair cover, Kristen Stewart. But anyway, yeah, and they have this party, and Ben Stiller does some cocaine, and like has this really, it's in the trailer, part of the conversation is in the trailer, and it has this like kind of conversation / confession with all these like kids. And the kids, like the way that they're partying and stuff, you can kind of feel like they feel invincible or something like a superhero would. And Ben Stiller is so handicapped as this 40-year-old. Like, he's not even that old, he's 40.
Yeah.
But, and also the other thing, too, I loved is the way that Ben Stiller looked in this movie. I mean, he's skinny, bony face, tired eyes, gray, long hair, you know? And also how Ben Stiller, it's funny, he makes that comment, and yet he still dresses like a kid himself.
Yeah.
His character.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know,
it's kind of cool. That girl, who's Juno Temple's friend, is in Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, is she?
She's not
the girlfriend?
One of Flowers. No, oh, she's another one, but she's in there. But anyways, Greenberg, you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so, I mean, definitely.
If you watch the trailer, don't like it, if you don't like Noah Baumbach movies, if you, like Dan said, if you need a narrative that, like, has a lot of twists and surprises. And
if you don't like awkward comedy.
Yeah, don't see it. But
it is not, like, this is not a Wong Kar-wai. This is literally Ben Stiller has not made a movie like this since Reality Bites. You know, or Your Friends and Neighbors. If you liked Ben Stiller and Your Friends and Neighbors, I know that like probably 14 people have seen that movie. It's free on Hulu. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, it's very good. Then definitely see him in this movie because it is an extension of a character like that, a very unlikable.
I mean, if you liked him in Envy,
no one liked him in Envy.
Dupe actor. Speaking of, go see Go on Funny or Die. And see his interview with Zach Galifianakis on
Between Two Ferns.
It's
brilliant.
Hilarious. It's
brilliant.
Hilarious. Yeah. But yeah, no, definitely, if you like it, if you're interested in what we're saying, and you think it sounds like a good movie, and you like the trailer, go see it.
Definitely worth every
penny. And Focus Features is kind of putting it out there. Like, it came to Buffalo the second weekend of the
release. Yeah, hopefully. Awesome. I mean, hopefully, you know, at the very least, Ben Stiller kind of pushes it to some sort of money, hopefully. Yeah.
And as a quick side note, Noah Baumbach's next movie will be The Emperor's Children. Now, this is a movie he wrote and Ron Howard was going to direct, but now Ron Howard's just producing, and it's a movie with Keira Knightley, Eric Bana, and Richard Gere. It's kind of like kicking and screaming a little bit. It's about Brown University graduates who are approaching their 30s with trepidation as they struggle to realize the lofty expectations held for their personal and professional lives.
No, so it sounds like every Noah Baumbach movie that we've seen, which I have no problem with.
Yeah. That's the other thing, like, he doesn't really change it up, but like I said, I told you before, like, I don't really care. Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, I guess you could argue it's kind of annoying that, like, all of his films are about, you know, upper middle class, you know, kind of supported by their parents, white people who are intellectuals. You know, that's a very minute group, but... You know, there's a place for every film, I guess. And so, I mean, if that's what he knows, if that's who he is, and that's who he is, then I guess so.
Yeah, I mean,
he knows it well.
And screenplay wise, he worked with Wes Anderson on Fantastic Mr. Fox, and then they're gonna do another movie together too.
Nice. So, can't wait. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Yeah, it's incredible.
It's a great screenplay. Yeah. And all right, so let's move on.
Yeah, that's
good. Right. Last on to the next one. On to the next one, Hot Tub Time Machine.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
Now, this is...
HTTM.
Yep. This movie, extremely complex, so it's going to take us a while to kind of...
To explain,
but...
Time travel aspects of it.
Yeah, it's like Primer. If you've guys seen Primer...
It's more complicated than Primer.
Yeah. So this is directed by Steve Pink. He was a co-writer on Gross Point Blank and...
Great film.
And High Fidelity. and he kind of got into directing with Accepted, which was I've liked that
movie. Underrated.
Yeah,
underrated.
I thought everyone kind of liked that movie, and then on Rotten Tomatoes it's at like 30%.
Yeah, well, it's one of those comedies, you know, critically unappreciated, but really for people who it was made for, I think definitely a hit.
Yeah, yeah, and kind of funny. He's a producer on Night and Day as well. But yeah, no, this is a script written by Josh Heald, Sean Anders, and John Morse. And two of those guys, they did
Sex Drive.
Sex Drive, and She's Out of My League, which we talked about earlier. Right. But no, yeah, this is kind of, a lot of people said it would be the hangover of this year. And I would say I laughed as much, but we'll talk about.
As much as in The Hangover?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no, I'm definitely funny. The joke to laugh ratio is a lot lower though in this film than in The Hangover.
Yes, that's the thing. That's the thing about it. See, yeah. Hangover kind of took its time, and that's actually a great way to put it. Yeah. I never thought about that.
I mean, yeah, and I think, I mean, say what you will about that, but it's kind of like what's a film that's like that? You know, there are films that just films.
Cop Out has the biggest one of all time.
Laugh
twice.
Like when you watch, Well, okay, for example, Step Brothers. Mm-hmm. Step Brothers,
yeah,
I mean, with time, you laugh more. And this movie might be like that, where with time and with friends watching it, the more that you talk about it, the more that you make the jokes your own or whatever.
I mean, a lot of those actually...
But when I saw Step Brothers the first time, the joke to laugh ratio was kind of low. I mean, because there were so many jokes. Literally, every second is another joke. So you're laughing not every second, but you're laughing enough, essentially, because it's throwing so much at you.
Yeah.
And this film's a lot like that, you know, Rob Corddry, who I think is, I mean, at the very least, this film shows that he is capable of being one of the funniest people on screen. So, I think...
Someone said that this will do for him what The Hangover did for Zach Galifianakis.
More
people need to see it.
More people need to see it.
I feel like he may get,
well.
You know...
Hopefully he gets a couple more roles out of it, at the very least.
I mean, for those who haven't seen it, simply...
Yeah, three friends and John Cusack's character's nephew.
Which I was wondering how they were going to fit that in.
Yeah.
And then
they go for a long weekend to a ski resort. They get in a hot tub. That's a time machine. And they go back to 1986. And they have to get back to 2010 without, like, messing up everything.
Yep.
And spoilers, they mess up shit. So,
yeah, they do.
Sorry for people who were caring about the end of the movie. No, but... One of my bigger pet peeves with this film is that John Cusack's kind of wasted. You know, I mean, there could have been a lot more John Cusack rom-com 80s icon jokes.
Yeah, I mean,
there were a couple, but, like, I was kind of surprised they didn't throw in more references to, like, The Sure Thing, Better Off Dead, Say Anything, One Crazy Summer, and, like, the 14 other, rom-coms that he was in the 80s, which is why he's famous, essentially.
Yeah.
That was kind of strange.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably maybe a studio choice, because the people who are going to be going to see this movie, presumably, don't really watch those films, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, but apparently no one went to go see the movie, so
yeah, well, it's
a miscalculation by MGM, but...
Yeah, I mean, then I think my favorite part is Crispin Glover. I don't know if you
remember. Yes, definitely.
He steals every scene he's in. Yeah. And,
that was a nice 80s touch.
Yes.
Because he was George McFly in Back to the Future, and, you know, which is about time.
Chevy Chase, kind of, whatever.
That was...
He had, like, one funny joke, I think.
Yeah.
Or two, and that was about
it. Well, Chevy Chase is kind of, I think, more of just a timepiece now.
Yeah.
You know, less of an actor and more of just a thing.
Yeah, but definitely, like Dan said, Rob Corddry and then Craig Robinson. Yeah.
Craig Robinson's always funny, yeah. I mean, Clark Duke, I kind of keep waiting for him to be as funny as I think he is, and he kind of never is as funny as I think he is.
Yeah.
Like, he's funny in Sex Drive, and that's like a movie where you think, oh man, the next thing he does, and this is the next thing he did, and it wasn't really what I thought it would be.
Yeah, I mean, he was,
I guess he doesn't get a lot of jokes. Yeah. He's kind of like the second straight man to John Cusack.
And even, he was funny in the TV show he did with...
Michael Cera.
Michael Cera, I watched all those. He's funny, but, like, he doesn't have enough screen time. And even, I read Kick-Ass today.
Yeah, I've read the screenplay, like, the first, like, 30 pages. He kind of disappears.
Yeah, he's not. And I read the whole thing, and he's not. He's in it for, like, 3 scenes.
Right. So it's interesting. Like, I wonder who his agent is and why he isn't getting Clark Duke better roles.
Yeah.
Honestly. Just because the kid clearly has something.
Yeah.
I mean, watch Sex Drive. I mean, the kid clearly has something.
Definitely.
But, I don't know. I mean, apparently... But the, Rob Corddry, though, he's so crass and just so, like, wired.
Yeah.
And, you know, and, like, and as for who directed it, Steve Pink, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's nothing original about this film at all. I mean, and that's another reason why, I mean, it's not, like, something
I think,
like
I don't
Hangover.
Know, I think they did the 80s environment well.
And that, yeah, but, like, they did it well, but it's kind of like when you go back to the 60s, the 50s, and it just, every, like, you know what reminded me of?
It's all that.
You know how in Watchmen, like, when they're in the 70s, and everybody's dancing the street to like, disco music? That's not what the 70s were like. I mean, people weren't just dancing in the streets to disco music in the 70s. They were at disco clubs dancing. Some of them were. But, like, that, I would equate the 80s, they're, and listen, it's a comedy, so they can do that. You know, but Watchmen, it would, in Watchmen, it's a mistake or whatever. But in this, it's just a decision, I guess. Yeah. But like, I would have like I said, I would have liked them to get a little bit more specific with John Cusack being in the fucking movie. You know, just make a Better Off Dead joke.
Yeah.
You know, do like a little animate, because you know those films with you know, Steve Savage, the director, he was an animator, so you have a lot of the, there was literally scenes of animation about John Cusack's character and, like, shit that would happen to him. And that would have been a nice little touch, like a little 3-minute animation scene, like, as a reference to Steve Savage. You know, you make it funny and universally funny enough for people who aren't going to get it, and they'll just be like, oh, that was weird animation.
Yeah.
You know, and then people who do get it will appreciate it. Yeah. You know, I didn't really understand why that wasn't ever implemented or something of that nature. Like, no scene where John Cusack goes up to his, like, his ex-girlfriend and, like, you know, plays a stereo or something, like, you know, like, holds up a stereo or something like that. That would have been nice.
Yeah.
Holds up an iPod.
Yeah. And, I mean, his love interest in the film, Lizzie Kaplan, I don't think she was too good.
She was underused.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's another person, Lizzie Kaplan, like, kind of like Clark Duke.
Yeah.
Like, when is she going to get that role where people are like, you know, oh, like, you know, people watch Party Down. No one does. If someone did, they'd realize that she's awesome.
Please watch it.
Yeah, please watch it. I mean, for Adam Scott and Lizzie Kaplan, yes. Jesus, it's just like watching gold. But, like, you know, Lizzie Kaplan, you know, she's in Cloverfield for 30 minutes. She's in this movie for 15 minutes. She, like, just get her a role where it counts.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but,
I mean, yeah.
But definitely, I mean, in terms of Guy's Night Out.
Definitely, yeah.
You know.
It's
a fun film.
Yeah.
But I do understand why it wouldn't be a successful Hangover.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't. I guess it might have as broad of appeal, but, like, the Hangover is special. Like, it was. I mean, like, you know, you can laugh at that, but, like, The Hangover had something. You know what I mean? It was well made.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, whatever, the writing, you know, and the editing. People talk about the editing, but, like.
And I also think, I mean, those four characters, you could feel that they had something together. With these, it's like, oh, here's four really funny people.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, like, and also they were different.
Yeah.
Kind of, and I guess Rob, these four characters
are
different.
I mean, Rob Corddry and Craig Robinson are kind of like, I mean, he's kind of ridiculous, but they're also cracking the same, like, they're also
right, you know, and these characters are a lot less likable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, Ed Helms' character in the beginning is kind of likable. Doug, I mean, even Doug is kind of likable.
I mean, John Cusack is not as sexy as Bradley Cooper.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I mean, truth be told, that is the other thing. There's no one that's really good-looking in this film. I mean, Bradley Cooper is a very good-looking guy. I mean, even though he plays a dick, he's, like, charming, so it's like, yeah, so that's a good point. A lot of things.
Yeah, but I mean, I am surprised only 13 million.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it would make a little bit more. And I think word of mouth will help it, but yeah. Reading about the film, they definitely spent all told, they spent about 90 million on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With, you know, with the budget being like around 40 and the P&A being around 50.
Yeah.
I mean, 90 mil, only making 13 is kind of not that great, so.
Yeah. Wow, no.
What are you going to do? I mean, it was a good try.
I would definitely recommend it, though. It's definitely.
If
you want, like, a Hangover light, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely Hangover, I guess.
I mean, I hope it does well on DVD. I mean, I feel just...
I think it will. I mean, I think it will definitely.
Like, I would probably get this movie on DVD just
sure.
to pop in.
Sure.
It's definitely funny. I even like the way they kind of handled... I mean, we won't go to spoilers because it's not needed. But I like the way they handled the time travel thing at the very
end. Totally. And also, like, what a lot of reviews are saying and... You know, whatever, spoilers. There are some emotional arcs, just kind of obligatory emotional arcs, but they don't ever concede to them, and, like, they don't ever have a scene where you really feel like... Like, even the romantic scene between John Cusack and Lizzie Kaplan is a knockoff, and this was a nice moment, is a knockoff of 16 Candles. So that was nice.
Yeah.
I wish there was more moments like that, but, like, that, even that was nice. And the ending isn't really sentimental as much as it is just ridiculously funny.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So definitely, good for them to not really give in to shit like that. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm definitely gonna be interested to see what these writers keep doing because I really liked everything they've.
Yeah, Sex Drive. Yeah, I've seen She's Emily Week. Yes, so I gotta definitely do that.
So yeah, no, check out Hot Tub Time Machine in theaters now. All right. Well, that wraps up our reviews. You want to talk about what's coming out?
Sure.
So we saw... We can't say anything, because they're listening. No.
We're not allowed. We're not allowed to say anything.
But Clash of Titans comes out next week. That's the only wide release. I mean, the last song comes out, too, I think. Yeah,
it does. Yeah, is that why?
Yeah. And so, I mean, Miley Cyrus and Liam Hemsworth gets there.
And Greg Kinnear, dude.
Yeah.
Love me some G. Kinnear.
Oh, that's the reason why I did. Oh, because I said best film. I'm doing every month, you know, top films to see. And Last Song comes out on March 31st, so I can't include it.
Well,
it's getting like a get March. It comes out March 31st because it's just getting like a day before, I guess.
Oh, April.
It's getting like a Thursday.
Oh,
yeah.
So you can't release.
Yeah.
It.
So it was gonna be my number one movie to see, guys. So
wait, so it's coming out tomorrow,
Thursday? Thursday.
No, because today's March 30th.
Yeah. Then March. Oh.
It's coming out Wednesday.
Yeah, and then what's... Oh, yeah, because
April 2nd is Friday.
That's kind of weird.
No, I mean, movies come out Wednesday.
Yeah, but, like, big budget movies come out Wednesday. I've never
that's
heard
strange.
Of that.
Yeah. What are you going to do? They're trying to beat the Clash. They're trying to beat the Clash.
Mm-hmm. Of Titans. And I guess Why Did I Get Married 2 comes out.
So something for everybody.
Yep. And limited releases of Don McKay, which looks...
I've seen it.
Oh, yeah, Dan.
Don't.
You want to early review here?
Early review, it's horrible.
Okay.
Seriously, it's horrible. Seriously.
This
not kidding.
Movie with Thomas Hayden Church. And so if you see that movie,
starts out promising. It really does. So don't get deceived if you do pay to see it. Just don't pay to see it.
All right.
That's a promise. All
right. Yeah, I mean, we
you
don't
heard
really,
it here first.
Yeah. You heard it here. And yeah, there's not much to look forward to until Kick-Ass 2 weeks from now. I mean, date night next week.
Yeah, which, who knows?
Screening.
Yeah.
Whatnot. All right. Well... Yeah, we will be back next week to talk about Clash of the Titans. And you can email us at editors@thefilmstage.com for any questions. And hey, go online and check out the Box of Surgery's trailer, which I just finished editing the movie. The trailer's up. And
yep.
It's premiered late April next to Dan's.
Yep.
Alright, so we will see you next week for some Titan Clash.
And everybody have a happy Easter.
Yes, happy Easter. Alright, thanks guys. Good night. You know that I can show